Avos Perk Aleph Mishnah Hey 1-5, and now the counterpart to Yosi ben Yoezer is this Mishnah's Yosi ben Yochanan Ish Yerushalayim, the Av Bezdin at that time. And again, we have relatively little historical background about these men in particular. We do know, again, they're living in the time of the Syrian Greek persecutions, the Seleucid persecutions, and the Hanukkah story. And we have very little about them personally, what they did in terms of their impact directly on the Jewish people in their history. We do have one Gemara in Masechet Shabbos Yodalad, which says that these two were, they were gozer. They decreed that Eretz Ha'amim, the land outside of Israel, is tame, is you know, richly impure. Now that had a few stages, but that, keep it simple for now. The reason given is the concern there would be unmarked graves elsewhere. The question, of course, is why now? And it's speculative, the answer, but there are those who think that perhaps, you know, there would be a good reason for Jews to be wanting to leave Israel in the wake of the persecutions, and this would be a disincentive for that. Similarly, you have a second thing, the other thing that they did, also there in Shabbos Yodalad, which is they declared clay zechuchis, glass receptacles, to be susceptible to tumah, meaning as far as the Torah is concerned, there are just sort of seven, I'll call them industrial materials, that are susceptible to tumah, and glass isn't one of them. But they added glass to the list, and why that would have been, in this time, again, it's speculative, but very possibly this is a time of financial hardship, socioeconomic hardship, because of the persecutions, and the glass manufacturing was all happening, you know, to the north in modern-day Lebanon, like in the coast north of Israel. And then again, perhaps sort of as disincentive, economic disincentive, and to help local industry in Israel, perhaps that's the reason why there were gozer. Whatever the case is, if you learn along those lines, you see this is a time of their interest was socioeconomic in addition to other things. And our Mishnah here has three things which sort of bespeak about concerns perhaps that revolve around socioeconomic hardship that were happening specifically in the time of Yosi ben Yochanan. He says three things here, and I think all three of them, the way that the classic Rishonim learn them, is not probably how you learn them or would learn them if you read it just on face value. He said the three things he said, in short, I'll read them all now just so you have them, is first of all, he said, Yihi beischa pasuach lerevacha, your house should be wide open. Second of all, vayu aniyim b'nei beisecha, the poor should be like members of your household. And v'altar b'sicha im ha'isha, one shouldn't excessively chit-chat, idle chatter with his wife. There's a little more on that than the mission to go with. Those are basically his three points. Now, each of these three are not probably what you think on face value, so let's go through them one at a time. The first, he says, is yibescha pasuach lirvacha. Your house should be wide open. Now, it could have said just open. What's the wide open lirvacha? So there are two basic approaches. The primary approach, like Rash and the Rambam, is we're talking here a picture that sort of, if you think of like Avram Avinu and his tent open to the four directions for people who are coming by, they could come in. So similarly, we're talking about like Ovei Drachim, wayfarers who are out-of-towners. If they come to town, they shouldn't have to look for a way in. They should see your door is wide open. They can come right on in. That's how I would say the majority learn it. And the Lirvacha, the wide open modifier, says the door should kind of literally be open so they can, you know, find easy, quick access. There is another approach, which I think is probably more in line with your first thought, which is, we'll call it the approach of Rabbeinu Yonah, his first approach, and Tiferes Yisrael, which is that Lirvacha isn't wide open. It's like Lashon, you know, like that the Jews found Revach and Hatzalah. Revach is something like, you know, relief. And the idea is that your house should be a place that's open to provide relief to others, whatever they might need, whether that's, you know, just a place to hang out, financial support in terms of loans or tzedakah, maybe even just, you know, a place to get some comforting words, some moral support, some good advice. Whatever it is, you're there for them. Your home is a place where people can kind of find relief and succor, and you'll provide it for them. Now, the big difference between the first approach and the second approach is that the second approach here would be applicable not just to the poor and needy, and wayfarers are like essentially temporarily poor and needy as they're away from home, but this applies to everybody. Your attitude is that your home is open to whoever wants to come and they can find what they need with you. You're open to provide it. Again, think like Avram Avinu, but a different understanding of the word lirvacha here. The second part is vayu aniyim b'nei veisecha. The poor should be members of your household. So again, the basic approach, the primary approach, I'll call it, in the Rishonim, like the Bar Tanura and others, is we're talking here about the servants who are running your home. And we're saying, don't purchase Gentile slaves and employ Gentile labor. Rather, get Jewish labor, and you'll provide jobs for Jewish workers. So instead of having, you know, foreign workers in your home, give the job to local Jews. And they should be B'nei Veisecha. They should be like, you know, members of your household, because in the time of the Mishnah, people actually own slaves. No one, you're not allowed to buy a Jewish slave. That's not a thing under normal circumstances. We can't get the details now, but the bottom line is Jews were not slaves under normal circumstances, ever. A Jew couldn't own a Jew, ever. But notwithstanding that, we're saying, you know, the employee, the house staff, would like be the live-ins, if you will, should be Jewish. So again, you provide, you know, financial support to the local Jewish population, who ostensibly might have, you know, been struggling, and why should you give the money elsewhere? The other approach is like Rabbeinu Yonah's approach, the second approach, is that the people who are needy should be comfortable in your home. Both of these are approaches to tzedakah. The first approach is that you're providing essentially employment for Jewish workers by serving in your home. And now, as the Rambam speaks out famously of the different levels of charity, is the highest level of charity, because the downside of charity is people being embarrassed and ashamed to need to be supported. So if you provide someone with a job and they're earning their keep, there's nothing shameful in that at all. Person can hold his head up high. So the first approach, that they should be members of your household in terms of employees, is that the highest level of tzedakah. The second approach here is saying people need things, and you should make them feel welcome in your home, like they belong there. The same way when your kid walks the door, you give them a smile. So if you have over your Shabbos guests and maybe they're sort of needy people or whatever it is, they feel comfortable, you give them the same kind of smile, and they feel, you know, welcome as part of your home, and therefore, of course, that sort of diminishes, takes the edge off of the harsh situation of being needy and dependent upon others. Okay, the third part of the Mishnah, which probably sits least easily with a contemporary reader, is Al tar b'sicha im ha'isha, one shouldn't chit-chat excessively with his wife. Now, I think just as a starting point, before I discuss let me discuss the technical words here. So two things. First of all, the word tarbeh means excessive. So it doesn't say don't speak with your wife. It means excessively. And sicha means like chit-chat. Okay? It means like sort of non-constructive speech, not for any great specific reason. It's just, you know, kind of shooting the breeze. So don't excessively chit-chat with your wife is the mandate here. Now, I think, to get your head around it, I think that the basic starting point of the Mishnah, Chazal, was that the notion of marriage isn't like our notion of marriage, many people's notion of marriage today. Marriage is analogous to a business partnership, okay? That is to say, it's not necessarily a business partnership, it's not business per se, but the point is we have a mission to do in this world. We can't do it alone, we need a spouse, so I'm going to take a wife, and together we're going to build a home and raise a family, and something I can't do by myself. Okay, and that's what the marriage is about and what it's there for. It's not just, you know, so I shouldn't be lonely and I can have a friend. That's not what it's about really at all. So the same way, I think, this is me speaking, but by analogy, if I were writing, you know, a book for, you know, good advice on for the business section of the library, you know, and I say, listen, if you have a true business partnership, you and a partner, so I would advise you strongly against excessive idle chit-chat. Why? Because you have other things to do which are more important, and idle chit-chat can bring a lot of problems. First of all, it can lead to, you know, disagreements over non-important things in the business. It distracts you from your goal, which is, you know, essentially, you know, profit, bottom line. And it can cause the other party to really sort of lose sort of faith or respect for you, because, you know, don't you have anything better to do than sit around and chit-chat about, you know, the sports and the weather? Don't you have something else you should be doing? We're here to build a business. Go do something towards that end. So I think that's the same kind of thing that Chazal have in mind here. This, you know, by analogy back to the marriage. But with one added element. If a person's business partner were someone from the opposite sex, so then there's an additional level of don't idle chit-chat, because that can lead to other worse things than just non-productivity or wasted opportunity, right? Could actually lead to sin. So that's what's happening here in the Mishnah. And you can explicitly see, I'll backtrack in a moment, but the rest of the Mishnah, it says as follows. Be'ishto Amru, this is our Mishnah's author, Yossi ben Yochanan, saying, I'm telling you this, I got it from my teachers. And when they said, Al tar b'sicha ima isha, so they said, don't talk excessively with ha'isha, the woman. So the word isha in Hebrew is ambiguous. It can mean a generic woman, or it can mean wife. It means both those things. So here you see there's a hey hadia, the hey hadia, the hey, it's the wife, that's telling you that the isha, telling it specifically your wife. And therefore he says explicitly, b'ishto amru. When my rabbi told this to me, they were talking about one's wife. Kol v'chomer be'eshes chavero. All the more so, it goes without saying, you shouldn't chit-chat idly, excessively with someone else's wife, for obvious reasons. Now, that's the end of his point. Now, the rest of the Mishnah here is actually like an editorial comment, if you will, coming from the author, the redactor of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, Rabbeinu HaKadosh, and he says, Mikan Amru, from here, from what we just said in our Mishnah up to now, they, like the subsequent rabbis of later generations, said, the Chachamim, Kol zman she'adam marba sicha ima isha, so long as a person is excessively chit-chatting with his wife, gomra la'atzmo, he causes bad things upon himself, uvotum adivrei Torah, he is idle from Torah study, he wastes the opportunity to learn, he's doing something else instead, v'sofo yorish gehenim, and in the end he will inherit gehenim. He'll pay in the hereafter for a shortcoming. So now, let's just read those three things back into the words, if you will. That's the explanation of why we're being told to altar v'sicha emisha, but not the success of chit-chat with the wife. So, first of all, we're saying here, why is it gorm ra la'atzma? Why does it cause bad to yourself? So first of all, the idle chit-chat can raise issues and disagreements between husband and wife that are sort of like inconsequential. Imagine the husband and wife, start arguing about politics. Are they voting, Republican or Democrat? That is a great shame and probably not essential at all to their mission of building a home and a family and children. That's not relevant, but it can become, a source of discord, and that's bad news. That's gorm ra la'atzma, causing bad for yourself. Worse than that, and I think this is an important point, it sort of, in a way, deprecates the relationship. In other words, there's a place, to have people of all sorts of relationships. But the spouse relationship, husband and wife, this is something which is sanctified. It's important. It really is there to support the most central values of a person's mission in this world, to build a home and a family and raise children and develop oneself and develop that relationship of husband and wife. And if you're, turning that into just idle chit-chat, so then you sort of are reducing the sanctity, the esteem that institution, that marriage, that relationship deserves. Again, Chazal, Mefarshim, everyone emphasizes there's definitely a time and a place for husband and wife, to talk and even to chit-chat. There's no objection to that. It's just that excessive chit-chat is the problem, okay? Excessive sicha, fruitless chatter. And third of all, it essentially can diminish the husband's esteem in the eyes of his wife. In other words, kind of like what I said before, in terms of the business context, don't you have anything better to do than sit around and talk about the yesterday's, sports games? Really? That's what your life is about? You have something, there's more to be done, so go be productive. Whether it's earning a living, whether it's spending time with the kids, whether it's, learning Torah, whatever it is, go do something worthwhile and stop, wasting time chit-chatting about, idle matters. That's gorm ra la'atzmo. Then you have botum adivrei Torah. He is idle from Torah study. The obvious reason is, so long as you're chit-chatting away, you're not learning Torah. That's bad news. But there's a second level, which is, even after the fact, if a person's, got all sorts of, side discussions happening with him and his wife, so he goes to learn his Torah, he'll still be reflecting back on her and their discussions and what he should have said and what she said and what she meant and what's going to happen when he comes home tonight. So he's distracted from his Talmud Torah even when he's down in the basement just trying to learn. And third of all, sofa yorish gehenim. In the end, he'll inherit gehenim. So many learn here, this is basically kalas rosh, frivolity, lightheadedness, mevim l'dei arayos, brings a person to sin, in terms of sexual morality here. So in the context of the husband and wife, that would be limited to something like, say, if the woman were a nida at the time or something, and then we'd have separate concerns. It would be kind of like one of the harchakos. There are a variety of, preventative measures that the husband and wife shouldn't come to sleep together while the woman is, in menstruating and forbidden to him. So it's in that kind of vein. But of course, there's a second issue, which is the all the more so someone else's wife. Obviously, a person has no business chit-chatting with other people's wives, because that for sure would lead to improprieties.